Welcome back to The Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things. The Hemingway. Today we are talking about book 10, chapter 2 of The Brothers Karamazov. What a cheeky kid. What are your predictions on how will he be significant to the plot? What was his name? This kid? I've already forgotten it. It was Kolya. Kolya Krasotkin. Did I get that right? Or is that two different people? Nope, Kolya Krasotkin. I like this Kolya Krasotkin kid. He's a mischievous little thing. And I like that he's kind of a natural leader. I am Norwegian, said so. The servant of the doctor's wife, which owns the house that the mother of Kolya Krasotkin is renting, has a pregnant servant, Katerina. The servant is just about to have a baby, and the doctor's wife is arranging an abortion. Did I read that correctly? I don't think so. I didn't pick up anything about an abortion. Or did the 19th century, I don't want to lose you as a servant, so we'll take care of it, just mean I'll get you some medical help so you don't die in childbirth? I have no idea what this is, or will be relevant to the plot, or how it will be relevant. But I'm kind of enjoying this new story, except the fact that I'm still getting my head around the new names. Yeah, Kolya seems to be the main one, right? Kolya Krasotkin, the kid. But what was that? The doctor's wife, who owns the house that the mother of Kolya is renting, has a pregnant servant, Katerina. Doctor's just about to have the baby, and the doctor's wife is arranging. Okay. Tekrific said, I read it that as she knew of a place where the servant could... servant girl could have her baby safely because they have a midwife and they could take the kid in if the servant wasn't able to care for it. Ah, that makes sense, says I'm Norwegian. Take care of it just sounds so ominous. Yeah. No, I think Tech's right there. I don't think it meant that that ominous version of take care of it, as we would say in more modern times. Laura Weistich said, yeah, definitely. I think the servant says that she's going to have that baby, the baby that morning, her water broke, and also the narrator mentions she's hiding it well, which implies she's very pregnant but has somehow concealed it. Techrific said, I like this Krasotkin fellow. I could get it behind a book on him. So far, Ilyusha and now Kolya are far more interesting characters than the whole lot we've had to deal with so far. It's obvious that Dosto really likes kids, and that their collective innocence and their different personalities is something that interested him. The kid is a natural leader, and his personality is cheeky, as Ander mentioned, but also one that is committed and caring. Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, and also noticed that he's quite like capable, and even a bit cunning. He seems very... I don't know, what's the word? Like, switched on. He seems like a smart kid. What else did you say there? There was another thing you said. Hang on, let me just skim back. Oh, yeah, that these two kids, Ilyusha and Kolya, are more interesting than the rest of the characters in the novel. Yeah, I kind of feel the same thing. And this last couple of chapters have gone really quite smoothly reading about this Kolya kid. They've been very enjoyable. Which is, it's just so funny to me, the contrast between chapters in this novel, how it can go from so tedious to, and then you'll have a chapter that's so clean and well-paced. It's strange to me. It seems really unpolished. Excuse me while I drink into the microphone. I'm having a beverage, having a little Coke. Zero. No, it's not even a Coke Zero. It's an Aldi brand Diet Coke. other brands of Diet Coke are available. This is not a sponsored episode. Okay. Cool. Okay, so now we've got this new character, this kid, and, you know, I might be saying this a little bit too soon, but he is maybe my favorite character in the book already. He's only been in the book for two chapters. So, I'm pretty keen to move on and read chapter 3, which is entitled The Schoolboy. But first, I'm going to have another sip of this delicious beverage. Yum. While the audience waits patiently for me to continue, and the rain pitter-patters on the roof above me. I'm getting more and more casual with this podcasting thing, where now I just enjoy a drink while I do it. I used to be very professional, you know, edit out any little hiccups that I might have, like literal hiccups or as a figure of speech, or edit out little mistakes, edit out if I yawned, sneezed, had a drink. Now, nah. Part of the charm, hey? It's raw, straight to the people. You get to hear me drink a glass of Coke. Alright, chapter 3, the schoolboy goes like this. But Kolya did not hear her. At last he could go out. As he went out at the gate, he looked around him, shrugged up his shoulders, and saying, "It is freezing," went straight along the street and turned off to the right towards the marketplace. When he reached the last house but one before the marketplace, he stopped at the gate, pulled a whistle out of his pocket, and whistled with all his might, as though giving a signal. He had not to wait more than a minute before a rosy-cheeked boy of about 11, wearing a warm, neat, and even stylish coat, darted out to meet him. This was Smirov, a boy in the preparatory class, two classes below Kolya Krasotkin, son of a well-to-do official. Apparently he was forbidden by his parents to associate with Krasotkin, who was well known to be a desperately naughty boy, so Smirov was obviously slipping out on the sly. He was, if the reader has not forgotten, one of the group of boys who, 2 months before, had thrown stones at Ilyusha. He was the one who told Alyosha about Ilyusha. By the way, the rain is coming down rather heavily now, which makes a lot of static noise in the background. So if you're hearing a fair bit of static hiss in the background of this episode, sorry, there's not really much I can do to edit that out without sort of destroying the quality of the sound. So just try to enjoy the rainy mood. "I've been waiting for you for the last hour, Krasotkin," said Smirov stolidly, and the boys strode towards the marketplace. "I am late," answered Krasotkin. "I was detained by circumstances. You won't be thrashed for coming with me." "Come, I say, I'm never thrashed." "And you've got Perovzvon with you?"
"Yes."
"You're taking him too?"
"Yes."
"Ah, if it were only Zuchka." "That's impossible. Zuchka is non-existent. Zuchka is lost in the mists of obscurity." "Ah, couldn't we do this?" Smirov suddenly stood still. "You see, Ilyusha says that Zuchka was a shaggy, greyish, smoky-looking dog like Perezvon. Couldn't you tell him this is Zuchka, and he might believe you?"
"Boy, shun a lie, that's one thing, even with a good object, that's another. Above all, I'll have you not told... I hope you've not told them anything about my coming."
"Heaven forbid, I know what I'm about." "But you won't comfort him with Perezvon," said Smirov with a sigh. "You know, his father, the captain, the Wisp of Tow, told us that he was going to bring him a real mastiff pup with a black nose today. He thinks that would comfort Ilyusha, but I doubt it." "And how is Ilyusha?"
"Ah, he is bad, very bad. I believe he is in consumption. He's quite conscious, but his breathing's gone wrong. The other day he asked to have his boots on, to be led around the room. He tried to walk, but he couldn't stand. 'Ah, I told you before, father,' he said, 'that those boots were no good. I could never walk properly in them.' He fancied it was his boots that made him stagger, but it was simply weakness, really. He won't live another week. Herzenstube is looking after him. Now, they are rich again. They've got heaps of money. They are rogues."
"Who are rogues?"
"Doctors and the whole crew of quacks collectively, and also, of course, individually. I don't believe in medicine. It's a useless institution. I mean to go into all that. But what's that sentimentality you've got up there? The whole class seems to be there every day. Not the whole class. It's only 10 of our fellows who go to see him every day. There's nothing in that. What I don't understand in all this is the part that Alexei Karamazov is taking in it. His brother's going to be tried tomorrow or next day for such a crime, and yet he has so much time to spend on sentimentality with boys. There's no sentimentality about it. You're going yourself now to make it up with Alyosha. Make it up with him? What an absurd expression. But I allow no one to analyze my actions. And how pleased Alyosha will be to see you. He has no idea that you are coming. Why was it you wouldn't come all this time? Smirnov cried with sudden warmth. My dear boy, that's my business, not yours. I am going of myself because I choose to. But you've all been hauled there by Alexei Karamazov. There's a difference, you know. And how do you know? I may not be going to make it up at all. It's a stupid expression. It's not Karamazov at all. It's not his doing. Our fellows began going there themselves. Of course, they went with Karamazov at first, and there's been nothing of that sort of silliness. First one went, and then another. His father was awfully pleased to see us. You know, he will simply go out of his mind if Alyosha dies. He sees that Ilyusha's dying, and he seems so glad we've made it up with Alyosha. Alyosha asked after you, that was all. He just asks and says no more. His father will go out of his mind or hang himself. He behaved like a madman before. You know he is a very decent man. He made a mistake then. It's all the fault of that murderer who beat him then. Karamazov's a riddle to me all the same. I might have made his acquaintance long ago, but I like to have a proper pride in some cases. Besides, I have a theory about him which I must work out and verify. Kolya subsided into dignified silence. Smirnov too was silent. Smirnov, of course, worshipped Krasotkin, and never dreamed of putting himself on a level with him. Now he was tremendously interested in Kolya's saying that he was going of himself to see Ilyusha. He felt that there must be some mystery in Kolya's suddenly taking it into his head to go to him that day. They crossed the marketplace, in which, at that hour, were many loaded wagons from the country and a great number of live fowls. The market women were selling rolls, cottons and threads, etc. in their booths. These Sunday markets were naively called fairs in the town, and there were many such fairs in the year. Perezvon ran about in the wildest spirits, sniffing about first one side, then the other. When he met other dogs, they zealously smelt each other over according to the rules of canine etiquette. I like to watch such realistic scenes, Smirnov, said Kolya suddenly. Have you noticed how dogs sniff at one another when they meet? It seems to be a law of their nature. Yes, it's a funny habit. No, it's not funny. You are wrong there. There's nothing funny in nature. However funny it may seem to man with his prejudices, if dogs could reason and criticize us, that they'd be sure to find just as much that would be funny to them, if not far more, in the social relations of men, their masters. Far more, indeed. I repeat that because I'm convinced that there is far more foolishness among us. That's Rakitin's idea. A remarkable idea. I'm a socialist, Smirnov. And what is a socialist? Asked Smirnov. That's when all are equal and all have property in common. There are no marriages, and everyone has any religion and laws he likes best, and all the rest of it. You are not old enough to understand it yet. It's cold, though. Yes, 12 degrees of frost. Father looked at the thermometer just now. Have you noticed, Smirnov, that in the middle of winter we don't feel so cold, even when there are 15 or 18 degrees of frost as we do now, in the beginning of winter, when there is a sudden frost of 12 degrees, especially when there is not so much snow? It's because people are not used to it. Everything is habit with men. Everything, even in their social and political relations. Habit is the great motive power. What a funny-looking peasant. Kolya pointed to a tall peasant with a good-natured countenance in a long sheepskin coat, who was standing by his wagon, clapping together his hands in their shapeless leather gloves to warm them. His long fair beard was all white with frost. That peasant's beard is frozen, Kolya cried in a loud, provocative voice as he passed him. Lots of people's beards are frozen, the peasant replied, calmly and sententiously. Don't provoke him, observed Smirnov. It's all right, he won't be cross. He's a nice fellow. Goodbye, Matvey. Goodbye. Is your name Matvey? Yes, didn't you know? No, I didn't. It was a guess. You don't say so. You're a schoolboy, I suppose. Yes. You get whipped, I expect? Nothing to speak of, sometimes. Does it hurt? Well, yes, it does. Ech, what a life. The peasant heaved a sigh from the bottom of his heart. Goodbye, Matvey. Goodbye. You're a nice chap, that you are. The boys went on. That was a nice peasant, Kolya observed to Smirnov. I like talking to the peasants, and am always glad to do them justice. Why did you tell a lie, pretending we are thrashed? Asked Smirnov. I had to say that to please him. How do you mean? You know, Smirnov, I don't like being asked the same thing twice. I like people to understand at the first word. Some things can't be explained. According to a peasant's notions, schoolboys are whipped, and must be whipped. What would a schoolboy be if he were not whipped? And if I were to tell him we are not, he'd be disappointed. But you don't understand that. One has to know how to talk to the peasants. Only don't tease them, please, or you'll get into another scrape, as you did about that goose. So you're afraid? Don't laugh, Kolya. Of course I'm afraid. My father would be awfully cross. I'm strictly forbidden to go out with you. Don't be uneasy. Nothing will happen this time. Hello, Natasha, he shouted to a market woman in one of the booths. Call me Natasha. What next? My name is Maya, the middle-aged market woman shouted at him. I am so glad it's Maya. Goodbye. Ah, you young rascal. A brat like you to carry on us on so. I'm in a hurry. I can't stay now. You shall tell me next Sunday. Kolya waved his hand at her, as though he had attacked him and not he her. She had attacked him and not he her. I have nothing to tell you next Sunday. You set upon me, you impudent young monkey. I didn't say anything, bawled Maya. You want a whipping? That's what you want, you saucy jackanapes, jackanapers, jackanap, jackanapes? I don't know what that word is. There was a roar of laughter among the other market women around her. Suddenly, a man in a violent rage darted out from the arcades of the shops close by. He was a young man, not a native of the town, with dark curly hair and a long pale face, marked with smallpox. He wore a long blue coat and a peaked cap and looked like a merchant's clerk. He was in a state of stupid excitement and brandished his fist at Kolya. I know you, he cried angrily. I know you. Kolya stared at him. He could not recall what he could have had a row with this man, but he had been in so many rows in the street that he could hardly remember them all. Do you? He asked sarcastically. I know you, the man repeated idiotically. So much the better for you. Well, it's time I was going. Goodbye. You are at your saucy pranks again, cried the man. You are at your saucy pranks again. I know you are at it again. It's not your business, brother, if I am at my saucy pranks again, said Kolya, standing still and scanning him. Not my business. No, it's not your business. Whose then? Whose then? Whose then? It's Trifon Nikitich's business, not yours. What Trifon Nikitich? What Trifon Nikitich? Asked the youth, staring with loutish amazement at Kolya, but still as angry as ever. Kolya scanned him gravely. Have you been to the Church of the Ascension? He suddenly asked him, with stern emphasis. What Church of Ascension? What for? No, I haven't, said the young man, somewhat taken aback. Do you know Sabaneyev? Kolya went on, even more emphatically, and even more severely. What's Sabaneyev? No, I don't know him. Well then, you can go to the devil, said Kolya, cutting short the conversation, and turning sharply to the right, he strode quickly on his way, as though he disdained further conversation with a dolt who did not even know Sabaneyev. Stop, hey! What's Sabaneyev? The young man recovered from his momentary stupefaction and was as excited as before. What did he say? He turned to the market woman with a silly stare. The woman laughed. You can never tell what he's after, said one of them. What Sabaneyev is he talking about? The young man repeated, still furious and brandishing his right arm. It must be a Sabaneyev who worked for the Kuzmichkovs. That's who it must be, one of the women suggested. The young man stared at her wildly. "For the Kuzmichovs," repeated another woman. "But his name wasn't Trifon. His name was Kuzma, not Trifon. But the boy said Trifon, Nikitich. So it can't be the same." "His name is not Trifon and not Sabaneyev. It's Chichov. Put in suddenly a third woman, who had hitherto been silent, listening gravely. "Alexei Ivanovich. Ivanich is his name. Chichov Alexei Ivanich." "Not a doubt about it, it's Chichov," a fourth woman emphatically confirmed the statement. The bewildered youth gazed from one to the other. "But what did he ask for? What did he ask for, good people?" he cried almost in desperation. "Do you know Sabaneyev?" says he. "And who the devil to know who is Sabaneyev?" "You're a senseless fellow. I tell you it's not Sabaneyev, but Chichov. Alexei Ivanich Chichov. That's who it is." One of the women shouted at him impressively. "What Chichov? Who is he? Tell me if you know." "That tall, snivelling fellow who used to sit in the market in the summer." "And what's your Chichov to do with me, good people, eh?" "How can I tell what he is to do with you?" put in another. "You ought to know yourself what you want with him, if you make such a clamour about him. He spoke to you. He did not speak to us. You stupid. Don't you really know him?" "Know whom?" "Chichov. The devil take Chichov, and you with him. I'll give him a hiding, that I will." He was laughing at me. "We'll give Chichov a hiding. More likely he'll give you one. You are a fool, that's what you are." "Not Chichov, not Chichov, you spiteful, mischievous woman. I'll give the boy a hiding. Catch him, catch him. He was laughing at me." The woman guffawed. But Kolya was by now a long way off, marching along with a triumphant air. Smirov walked beside him, looking around at the shouting group far behind. He too was in high spirits, though he was still afraid of getting into some scrape in Kolya's company. "What Sabaneyev did you mean?" he asked Kolya, foreseeing what his answer would be. "How do I know? Now there'll be a hubbub among them all day. I like to stir up fools in every class of society. There's another blockhead, that peasant there. You know, they say there's no one stupider than a stupid Frenchman. But a stupid Russian shows it in his face just as much. Can't you see it all over his face that he is a fool, that peasant, eh?" "Let him alone, Kolya. Let's go on." "Nothing could stop me now I am once off. Hey, good morning, peasant." A sturdy-looking peasant with a round, simple face and grizzled beard, who was walking by, raised his head and looked at the boy. He seemed quite sober. "Good morning, if you are not laughing at me," he said deliberately in reply. "And if I am," laughed Kolya. "Well, a joke's a joke. Laugh away. I don't mind. There's no harm in a joke." "I beg your pardon, brother. Was it a joke?" "It was a joke." "Well, God forgive you." "Do you forgive me too?" "I quite forgive you. Go along." "I say, you seem a clever peasant." "Cleverer than you," the peasant answered unexpectedly with the same gravity. "I doubt it," said Kolya, somewhat taken aback. "It's true, though." "Perhaps it is." "It is, brother." "Goodbye, peasant. Goodbye." "There are all sorts of peasants," Kolya observed to Smirov after a brief silence. "How could I tell I hit on a clever one? I'm always ready to recognize intelligence in the peasantry." In the distance, the cathedral clock struck 11:30. The boys made haste, and they walked as far as Captain Snegurov's lodging, a considerable distance, quickly and almost in silence. 20 paces from the house, Kolya stopped and told Smirov to go on ahead and ask Karamazov to come out to him. "One must sniff around a bit first," he observed to Smirov. "Why ask him to come out?" Smirov protested. "You go in. They will be awfully glad to see you. What's the sense of making friends in the frost out here?" "I know why I want to see him out here in the frost," Kolya cut him short in the despotic tone he was fond of adopting with small boys. And Smirov ran to do his bidding. All right, there we go. Another chapter down. That was a good one. I like this kid. Kolya, cheeky. Cheeky little shit. Right? But very entertaining. I feel like I definitely would have been friends with this kid when I was a kid, and I would have really looked up to him because he's so cheeky. He's got such nerve. And I wouldn't have had that kind of nerve when I was a kid, but I would have definitely found it very entertaining to tag along and watch him do his mischief. That would have been me. I would have been just
Just watch. Just following him for the entertainment value. All right. That's going to do us for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening today. Have your say over at the subreddit as usual, and I'll see you tomorrow.